Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, and welcome to the Times Business Podcast, where we look ahead to the stories and events that are going to be in the headlines in the coming days, even though it is holiday time for a lot of people. I'm Robert Miller. This week, we'll be looking at prospects for retailers as they head into that long Easter weekend and how much of the spending there might be driven by a further binge on credit cards. I'm joined by Deirdre Hipwell, the Times retail editor, Alex Ralph, business correspondent, and Catherine Griffiths, banking editor of the Times. Thanks for being here. Welcome. Catherine, I want to start with you. We've heard a lot of warnings, perhaps from the Bank of England, about unsecured lending and on credit cards in particular. But I've seen many of the rules were put in place after the financial crisis to stop people going on a binge and tighter restrictions. We've seen noises from the banks recently about they'd like a lighter touch. This is what Mario Draghi had to say about a lighter touch regulation.
The last thing we need at this point in time is a relaxation of regulation. Nowadays, financial intermediaries are stronger than they were before the crisis. So the idea of repeating the conditions that were in place before the crisis is something that is very worrisome.
He made that speech earlier in the year, Catherine. Different times now, aren't they? Do you think there is a danger that the banks, we've heard in America, they may get their way, lighter touch regulation, therefore they could lend a bit more, and it's just the time not to?
I think that the banks won't get their way if they want light regulation anytime soon. We've seen the details of this year's stress test just come out from the Bank of England in the UK, which include exposure to things like credit cards. And I think looking back to the crisis, there's a question about to what extent was it the kind of evil big banks that caused the financial crisis through things like packaging up subprime loans in the States and selling them on to investors without really sort of telling people what was in those investments? And how much was it the people themselves, people who could never afford to repay a mortgage, taking out those loans? And so there's a sort of existential question that will rumble on, I imagine. But I think in pragmatic terms, regulators in this country, the Eurozone and the States, see it as more than their job is worth to in any way roll back on regulation.
But Alex, we saw, didn't we, some of those subprime packages or the investment packages sold before the market were also included unsecured credit, didn't they? So it's out there.
What we're also seeing, though, is the knock-on effects from the financial crisis, which has seen consumers who can't get access to credit, maybe they're turned away from the more mainstream sources, going to sort of less legitimate places. So we saw, you know, the sort of rise of the payday lenders, but we've also seen the rise of rent-to-own. And the FCA has obviously been looking into both of these parts of the market. They've been running a consultation. They're due to report back quite soon on this. But one of the particular problems at the moment is rent-to-own, where people who can't afford televisions or fridges or, you know, other household goods, which are quite pricey. So they're lent money at huge interest rates, which they then struggle to pay it back. And it's sort of a bit of a vicious cycle. One of these firms called Brighthouse, which is the biggest operator in the UK, has today been given authorization, and others are also awaiting it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's all part of the same issue. It's fundamentally whether you think it's okay for people with a certain amount of disposable income to go out and have these goods, and whether they can afford those things or not. And so they can either pay for them through rent-to-own schemes and whether we think those are acceptable, or they can take out a credit card, or they can take out a payday loan. And in a way, you the regulator, the FCA, which is responsible for consumers, almost has to sort of decide how it wants to sort of channel those people, and indeed whether it wants to kind of control regulations to the point where perhaps they can or they can't, you know, they could turn on the tap, turn off the tap. Although you could perhaps argue that actually it isn't a question for any kind of public body, and that should be left to people's own individual decisions. But certainly, I mean, as you say, Alex, I think we've seen the Financial Conduct Authority under Andrew Bailey, you know, wade into some of these markets with payday loans, credit cards, and now the rent to buy thing. Rent to buy, is it called?
Yeah, rent to own.
Rent to own. So then when you return to the mainstream banks, you sort of think to yourself, well, they've done lots of things which have been very anti the customer. Payment protection insurance is certainly one of those things. But, you know, you could also argue that a rational person with limited income, actually, yes, going to the bank and taking out a long-term loan to spend on certain things is probably the sensible way forward.
I agree with all of that, but I do think there's also the flip side of the argument that what makes this whole area quite difficult is it could be quite tough for the FCA or any body or bank to sit and judge whether or not somebody who's living in a council house and might want to buy a flat screen TV, whether or not they should be allowed to do that. And, you know, some people might argue that, you know, through hire purchase, which is effectively what rent to buy is, they've just tried to give it a nicer sounding name. It's hire purchase, or going to a payday loan lender. I mean, is that necessarily a bad thing if you follow all the terms? Because if you pay it back in the set period, yes, you're paying a bit more, but you're not necessarily going to get the really punitive rates which accrue the longer you don't pay. I think the real issue is often people don't know what they're getting into when they agree to these contracts. And I think that's the real issue. We saw that in the past, people taking out these credit cards and thinking, well, hey, I can go and, you know, kit my house out with all the latest things, and they're not really understanding how punitive the rate could get. So I think that's part of it, is consumer education.
Famously, from really quite a long time ago now, even the chief executive of Barclays Bank, when asked about some terms and conditions on a Barclays card at a Treasury Select Committee, couldn't answer those questions, which is kind of funny because it sums up the fact that a lot of these products are not really designed for people to understand the terms and conditions clearly. They're designed, I think a lot of people would say, to be quite opaque. And one of the things that people feel quite nervous about, investors, I think, feel quite nervous about with some financial institutions that have gone very heavily into sort of credit card with long balance transfers. There are some out there in the market which are, you know, 24 months, 36 months, is realistically, are people going to remember at that point that they have to suddenly move all their money off their credit card before some really quite extortionate interest rate kicks in? Or indeed, has that card product been designed to kind of trip some people up? And I think most people would say it's the latter.
Absolutely. I mean, if you ever look on the flip side of your credit card statement when you get it, I mean, there's a whole list of things that you're supposedly, you know, meant to know and govern by, and it's quite unintelligible. And you know, I also think oftentimes the people who are making these decisions are probably people who've never been in a situation where they've run out of money a week before payday. And if you're a family and you need urgent cash, to be honest, I would probably rather go to Wonga than a loan shark. So I think there is a place for some of these organizations, but I think key to it is how they're selling their products and marketing them, and whether or not people actually understand what they're signing up for.
Is there a point, Catherine, at which you can say, yes, I mean, leaving aside the payday lenders, but looking at the mainstream banks when they're lending money, they could argue that they're a business. They're not a fifth arm, if you like, of the state to provide benefits. But isn't there too, particularly in today's climate, a certain moral obligation? Do you feel, because I know you've looked into this, that they really do live up to, they play a role in fuller society, or are they just as, unfortunately, we all see them as just mean machines?
I think that they do a better job than they used to do. And actually, nowhere is this more apparent than in the world of PPI, which has cost banks a cool £40 billion or so far. And the issue there is that when the Financial Ombudsman and other groups are sort of looking back to see whether people should be compensated for this product, they have to take into account how the product was sold, but they also have to take into account, because they work inside the law, what the legal framework was at the time. And what you see is lots of people who would be compensated under today's terms and conditions who are not necessarily being compensated because they bought something with PPI 10, 20 years ago. So, I mean, I think that in itself shows that progress is being made, although you could also argue actually that that's just quite depressing, and that perhaps banks operating now should take a more generous view to what should and should not be compensated. Because after all, it might be kind of okay within the letter of the law, but is it okay given that these are potentially still customers, that banks are very kind of public institutions? They have learned since the financial crisis to take a slightly broader approach. But I think you still see, actually, in the last few years, things like packaged bank accounts, which some of them are quite good, but a lot of the banks now have provisions in their results for compensation, because essentially it isn't good value to sell a packaged bank account to someone with mobile phone insurance in it if, for example, that person doesn't have a mobile phone, that kind of thing.
Okay, well, just moving on slightly, Deirdre, it's quiet corporate reporting. We are going to be hearing, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, from Tesco and WH Smith, both, I mean, very high-profile retailers. Given the light of what we've been talking about and people spending, and they now seem to supply all things to all people, what is the outlook for them, do you think, going into that period, just generally?
Well, I mean, Tesco is going to be the big story next week. Yes, they'll be talking about consumer spending, but the real issue, the real area that the city will be looking at is its turnaround fully on track. This is quite a key moment for Tesco, because obviously they're trying to do this massive deal to take over Booker. So they will need to impress next week. They will need to show that their recovery is firmly on track, because there has, in the last few weeks, been increasing unease being expressed from certain quarters, including their third and fourth largest shareholder, that this deal is overpriced, it's going to destroy value, it's going to distract their attention at exactly the point that they should be focused on the business. So people are going to want to see that there's been a pickup in operating profit, like-for-like sales. They're going to want a bit more detail on the international business, which hasn't been performing as well, and there's been a bit of a restructure there recently. They might want an update on dividend reinstatement. They'll want to know what's happening with the pension plan. And then obviously, you know, there might be further commentary from Dave Lewis as to whether or not he thinks Tesco is over its crisis, which was obviously the accounting scandal, which they recently agreed a deferred prosecution agreement with the SFO. So that is the big news. WH Smith's will be the usual. It'll be, we're doing really well in our transport hubs. Our sales are up, our profits are up, and the usual defence of why their retail high street stalls always look a bit cruddy.
Which is quite hard to defend in the ones I've been into. But I suppose the other issues facing the retailers as well, but more broadly, is the is consumer spending power. And I think that the Bank of England was the latest to flag this week. And, you know, with rising inflation and the squeeze on wages, there's concern that that people are going to stop spending. And that's obviously a big worry for the sector, which actually in turn could push consumers towards these credit options.
Absolutely. And Canton World Panel did say this week that inflation had risen by 2.3% in the last 12 weeks up to about March 26. And that's because cost of staples are rising. So that's tea, butter, fish, fresh produce. And basically the average British household would have spent about an extra £21 and a bit in the last 3 months. I mean, if you add it up, it's only like an extra 20-25p a day. But inflation is going to continue, and that does have an impact, because I've even noticed that you can see that when you go into the stores now, there's fewer multi-buy offers because supermarkets have been removing that, and certain products which I buy on a regular basis, I can see that they've gone up, and tea is one of them, and I'm a prodigious tea drinker, so I have noticed that. I think it feeds through to confidence if people are paying more when they go to the grocery stores, and I think it'll be interesting to see how that pans out this year, and also how the supermarkets try and react to that, because obviously they're facing rising costs too because of the fall in the pound.
But of course, retailers cut the cost of products at their peril, Deirdre, don't they? As we have recently reported, the people who own Toblerone also own Cadbury. And I think they said that they measure everything against the horror that was the anger caused by messing around with Toblerones, by putting less Tobler in the Rhone. And even in this issue with the Easter egg hunt, by taking Easter out of the title, apparently that's sort of less awful for them than the wrath of the nation over Toblerone. So others will do the same at their peril.
Well, quite right. And I think Mondelez should feel embarrassed.
You're naming and shaming now, aren't you?
Absolutely. The Tobro. I mean, as value engineering, which is the horrible term that consumer companies use when they talk about effectively making a product slightly smaller but selling it for the same, if not more, because they're trying to get more bang for their buck. But, you know, there's value engineering, and then there was the, you know, what they did to Toblerone, where you could have driven a car through the gap in the triangle chocolate pieces. I mean, that was a bit too much, and they were quite rightly pilloried for that. But yeah, there'll be a lot of that going on. Suppliers to supermarkets are going to find it tough, because the pressure will be coming on to them to reduce their costs, same as for supermarkets. And it's a very competitive grocery market, which in the long run is great for us as consumers, but it's very tough for the grocery operators, because they're already operating on pretty thin margins.
Yeah, and I suppose we'll probably get a greater insight into the impact it's having on suppliers, that squeeze that the supermarkets are putting on them, when the regulator, the grocery code adjudicator, has its conference in a few weeks' time, and it publishes a survey from suppliers. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Because yeah, I think particularly if you look at Tesco, I mean, obviously they've done a lot to improve their relationship with suppliers, which was pretty much at a shocking nadir about a year and a half ago, which they've owned up to. But, you know, even if they are in a better relationship now, the fact of the matter is they're still going to come under pressure to try and help Tesco provide, you know, regular lower prices to consumers. And all the supermarkets are at it. So it's very difficult, particularly when you add in the backdrop of Aldi, Lidl and Iceland, whose sales have been growing quite rapidly in the last few weeks. So more people are turning to discounters again.
Well, lots to watch out for. Thank you all very much. And that's just about it for now. But remember, keep up to date with those results in particular. Deirdre will be following them. It'll be online, on your phone, on your tablet, and of course in the paper. If you aren't a subscriber, then please go to thetimes.co.uk and sign up there. And if you want to hear us weekly, do subscribe through iTunes, and feel free to post your comments. We'd love to hear from you. My thanks to Deirdre Hipwell, Catherine Griffith and Alex Ralph. They are on Twitter, so please do follow them, and join us again next week. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.